The old timers around here tell me that if he lasts 38 more days, Don's going to have 40 years. I did a little sneaking on the internet tonight, and I, you know, just kind of a frame of reference, 1961, JFK was president, El Cid was the movie of the year, West Side Story was the play that had just come out on Broadway when this man entered into Alcoholics Anonymous. I talked to him at dinner tonight, and it was interesting. I kept on prodding and trying to get something out of him about himself, and the one thing he was very proud of, with no kidding around, was that he was one of four people who signed a lien on his house to buy or put a lien, a promissory note up for Dr. Bob's house back when it was close that it was going to be sold. So this man's been around, and I know he's going to tell us a lot tonight. So with that, I'll introduce Don C.
Well, for those who know me, I'm Don Cassini. I'm a young man in an old container. If I live a few more months, I'll be 78 years old, and I just was down by the Gold Club down there, and I got a sidewalk vendor selling Viagra, so I think I'm in luck tonight. Can I put this down a little bit? I hate to see through my eyes. What was I going to say? I forgot. That's a senior moment, you know? I just found out also that this President Bush would talk to them in General Service, and when you get 40 years of sobriety uninterrupted, you get a pension. So some of you guys that are close, just hang in there. Don't give up now. Just keep coming back. I don't have a canned lead. I don't really know. I sometimes pick on something to talk about, but I really don't know. For those who've been here, I've been coming here for almost 20 years out of this roundup, and I think I'm a veteran. First time I come here, Mike was drawing cartoons with psychiatric help for 5 cents, and I stood there. I got here a day early. I thought Thursday was a big day here. I got here, and just Mike and I were drawing. He was drawing, and I was trying to get people to get help. And they put a nickel in the box, and they say, what do I do now? I got a problem with my husband. Either get rid of him or stay with him. That's a choice. And you notice something? We give up our choices when we come to Alcoholics Anonymous because we can't drink no more. I've been blessed. I'm very fortunate because I come in Alcoholics Anonymous at a time in Cleveland, Ohio, when some of the first 100 out of the 200 men were still alive. And I met a lot of them. But as you hear my story... And I was really a nice kid that came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't even need to take an inventory because everybody took it for me, you know what I mean? And but I was a nice kid. I was a young kid. I got in a lot of trouble. Not trouble, mischief. Today is nothing. They don't give me an award for being what I was. These kids today, they do things that are really bad. And not like me, I was just mischievous. If they tell you you couldn't throw the girl out and break years ago when we used to dance in a social room, or you threw them out, you got sent home or detention. And I'd skip school, and I do. And the cop on the corner didn't like me, and no one liked me. And I was, you know, I don't know where these people find out these problems they have in life when they're 10, 12 years old. Hell, I was born before the Big Depression. And I didn't know what it was to be poor. Everybody was poor. Hell, why did I wear it? And clothes, who know what clothes were, you know? Goodwill's got some good stuff. But, you know, it was nothing to be, and we had fun. We played stick in the mud, we played kick the can. These kids today got scooters. I told my son and one of my granddaughters, I said, I made a scooter like that out of an orange box and a piece of 2x4 and a skate that I split apart and put one in the front and one in the back. He said, nah, no, you know. I tell him I used to press my pants with a wet cloth because I only had one pair of pants to go to dance with. No, they don't believe that stuff. They think irons were steam all the time. They think everything was here all the time. They'll wake up. I And I came before there was this stuff. You know, I would get trouble, and my father would, if I got in trouble at school, and that time they'd call your parent down to see the principal. And if I went up to the principal's office and he'd come in and they called him from work and didn't make him get out of work, he'd smack me right in the principal's office. And then I smacked me when I got home. And I asked him, how come you hit me so hard and you don't hit my sister like that? He says, because I love you more. Now that was Italian love, you see. So I just don't know. Anyhow, at 17 years old, I was having enough problems in my own life. You know, I don't know anything about feeling insecure. I was always small. I was crazy. I did things that made it, brought attention to me. And if I would dare somebody would dare me to do something, I would do it. And I was a little nuts, is what I was. Anyhow, at 17 years old, they dropped a bomb in December in Pearl Harbor. And hell, I never thought I'd see a war, you know. But then one day, I was just thinking about this yesterday. We had a service where the deceased members of our club were killed in World War II. And it was 47 from my neighborhood. When I left for the Army in March of 1942, there was 240 left from my neighborhood. That cleaned that Italian neighborhood right out. Suddenly, we were no longer a ghetto. We were mixed up. But, you know, it just cleaned them up. And I read these names at roll call, and I started to cry because some of those guys I served with, one was my cousin. And, you know, it's... I will stand here and say one thing, thinking about yesterday. I'm proud to be an American. And if you really don't like America, go back where you come from. I live in an American community where I'm at, and I'm the only guy that flies a flag. Range sign, I put a light on it so they can see it at night. And I'm proud to be. But I went to the United States Army in 1942, March, and I went there. And the first place I went to, because I wanted to get away from all that discipline. And when I got to Camp Perry, I found out I made a grave mistake. You know, I was so small, I weighed 114 pounds. Now, if you'd have seen me then, you'd have bought Japanese war bonds. It would have been a better shot, you know. And, you know, I went to Camp Perry, and the first thing I did after I was there a day, I went over the hill. Now, I'll bring you my Army career's very studded, short career. It was beautiful. I had 15 summaries, two generals, was given a dishonorable discharge, and did time, given 2 years in Leavenworth Penitentiary, the metafederal part of it. And this was a nice kid that didn't drink but one time. I drank one time. Never drank before. I met a girl now she was from Georgia, so I got to remember this one. It was, really, honest to God. Anyhow, I was in Fort Leonardwood, Missouri, when I was going to take her over to Joplin so we can go dancing. And I knew about the stuff, what happens with these people. You get romantic, you know. So they said alcohol was a social lubricant. So I went to buy alcohol, and it was a dry. The war was on. There was no alcohol. I didn't pay any attention to it because I wasn't drinking. But when I got there, there was no alcohol. So I said, what do you got to make a girl sexy? And he said, oh, Mr. Boston, creamy top, slow gin. Oh, I figured, well, give me two bottles. It's small. It looked like wine. My father could drink a bottle of wine with no problem. So when we were young, we danced differently. Now, you kids... Some of you people with gray hair might remember this, but we knew what we did when we danced. We held a girl close. You knew you had a girl in your arms, and you watch on some of the AMC shows, you sort of dip them to the ground, and you just get the full impact then. And we started sipping and dipping on that gin, sipping and dipping. And we were sipping and dipping. And man, I tell you, by 11:30, I got this program. I'm just romantically so much in love, she don't know what day it is. But she hasn't got it, so I got to figure what I'm going to do now. Then, you know, we got a computer. And something I may say tonight, one person may hear it, may help them for the rest of their lives. It may get them drunk, too. Never know. But, you know, I thought of a guy in the neighborhood, every Italian neighborhood, we had a guy, Clem Bone. He taught you how to shoot crap. He taught you how to roll cigarettes, because we rolled them at that time. We didn't have real cigarettes. And he taught you everything you needed to know. Everything. And he told you when you go to the dance, because I loved to dance. We used to love to dance, but it kept us out of a lot of trouble when I was young. But we loved to dance. And he said, when you're dancing with the girl, you dip them a little bit and you blow in her ear. So here we are, sip, dipping and blowing. Sip, dipping and blowing. And the next thing you know, I woke up when I was in Springfield, Missouri, and I started out in Joplin. Didn't know how I got there. And I went, and I didn't know how to get back. I was broke. The first time out with this girl, first date, I'm on a furlough, and I'm on a pass. And I'm late going back because I don't know where I was at. Didn't have no money, so I had to get the MPs to take me back. And when I went back, they wanted to know why I was late. And I said, I don't know why. I had a blackout. I think they drugged me. And he said, oh, yeah? He laughed, you know. Then I went to a couple other guys. I told them what happened. They laughed too. And I said, the girl was gone. No money. I had nothing left. He said, well, that's a good start. Well, I didn't know that was going to leave me on this career when I got here. But, you know, I didn't drink no more after that. And I found out that when I went to get my pay, we got paid $21 a month. You know, I don't think anybody would even put a uniform on for that kind of money today. And we were going there when they were shooting real bullets, too. And anyhow, I looked at the thing and I said, how come I only have $11? They put you in a brown paper sack. He said, well, you got an allotment. I said, what's an allotment? He said, well, someone filed it. You got to give her an allotment. I said, who? He said, that girl you married the night we picked you up in the Springfield. I said, no. He said, no, don't tell me it's here. See, for you are old enough to remember you had a dog tag. And on your dog tag, it has your serial number. And I know mine right by heart still today, 3904354594. And she got that number and wrote another thing, and I was married to her. And I don't know if we ever got married, but she had an allotment coming. And, you know, if I found out 4 months later after I was telling everybody about this case, I talked to a priest. He said, we look into it. And, you know, I'll tell you something. You don't believe he's going to do it, too. But isn't it funny? You don't talk about God for a whole bit of time. Here I am in trouble. Now I want God to help me out. I don't understand that. It's like the girls that sow their wild oats all week long and then go to Sunday church and pray for a crop failure. You know. But you know, we got some crop failures there, huh? Anyhow, they found out about 4 months later that she was a very patriotic American. She married four or five guys that night. And I never bothered to find out if I had a honeymoon, if I was first, last, or wherever I was in that lineup. I didn't want to know. Anyhow, that marriage was annulled. But anyhow, I stayed there and didn't drink no more again. And then I got in some very serious trouble with my company commander, which doesn't have to go into it, but it was enough to send me to the penitentiary without a batting of an eyelash. And I went to this camp in Leavenworth, Kansas there, and when I got there, there was a whole lot of Italians there. I found out they didn't like their direction either, you know. But, you know, I come from a long line of people that run this gold club, you know. I'm not this club. But I mean, I come from a long... No, we're legitimate. I was telling Brooks. One thing, I come from a long line of family that was in the mafia, you know. And, you know, I don't say that because I'm proud, but I will say one thing. They never killed anybody who didn't have to be killed. Bottom line. They didn't just go down drive-by shootings just to be cute, you know. They got you. Bang. I lived in New York and I watched Albert Anastasia when they were all running out of the barbershop when they killed him at the Park Central Hotel. There he was, killed in the barber chair, just minding his business, waiting to get shaved. Well, he took it off. He didn't have to shave no more. But anyhow, I want to tell you one thing, so you remember this, and if you don't take us tonight here, AA is like the mafia, because if you leave here, you're dead. There's no two ways about it. Bottom line. So anyhow, I went overseas and I went to Armed Special Forces before they had the Rangers, and we were like Rangers, and we had to go in and sneak in the islands in the nighttime and get in there late and get in and radio back instructions where we thought they were entrenched in the caves and where the mortar guns were and all that. So I made two major invasions in the South Pacific, and we went along pretty good because they said if you go over there with 12 men in your squad and 8 come back, that's a miracle, because most times less than 8 come back. So we went on to this last invasion, and I would like to tell you, this is why I drank. Listen to this one. I've heard this crap too before. I don't know. I saw war. I saw everything that was brutal, and I never drank then. War is war. So for those who want to tell me about the war they were in, or the war, World War One, or World War, Spanish-American War, who cares? War is war. When they're shooting bullets, the bullets are going over your head. And if they hit you, you're dead. So war is war. So I never use that as an excuse to drink, but I'm going down one day down, we're going into this island late at night, and I'm walking in and we're going into these caves with flamethrowers and grenades to try to get the Japs out. And you know, you can almost smell that island. And my cousin Mikey was a couple arm lengths away, and his brother Bad Act plays a part in my life later on. And he stepped on a landmine. He got killed instantly, and I was blown up and hurt very bad. Next thing come out of my mouth to the corpsman that I got hurt bad enough to go home. He said, yes, you did. I said, thank you, God. You see, now I went back right to God. You know, I didn't bother him no more. I was taken to Hawaii, had major surgery done there, was in Hawaii for 7 months, sent back to Pasadena General in California to learn how to walk. The government had commanded that hospital. It's the hospital where the Rose Bowl goes right in front of him. And I stayed there, and after I got discharged, I stayed there 7 months in the hospital with surgery. I had to learn to walk all over again, and I wasn't doing too well. And when I got out of discharge, I didn't go home. I stayed in California because I loved California. It was beautiful. See, I lived in a neighborhood where it was all industry. There's a guy from Lakewood here, he could tell you. And we had all smokestacks. Well, I thank God for smokestacks. People worked and made money when we had the smokestacks. Now we got environment and no one's working. It's a tough situation. Tough. But we had and the girls all were just kind of funny. You know, they were babushkas and galoshes, you know. And there was none of that in California. Man, they had nice sunsuits on. And, you know, they paint their legs. You know, some of you girls might remember that. They were too old to remember that. They didn't have stockings, so they paint their legs, you know. And they looked nice. They smelled good, my God. And I'm waiting up one day to go to Boogie Burke Swing Club on the corner of Hollywood and Vine. And my buddy isn't showing up, so two girls walked in there. See, I've always had trouble with neons and nylons. That was a big, big problem. And I walked in there, and these two girls walked in, and I followed them in. I hadn't been drinking since the time I got married. Didn't know about them. Anyhow, taught me a lesson not to drink. Anyhow, I didn't drink, so when I walked in after these two girls, they smelled good, they looked good, and I wanted to talk to them. So I sat down next to them, and right on top of the stage was the King Cole Trio. And it was not King Cole and his father's the trio. They were playing, the bar went around and it was like a merry-go-round, and in the middle they had this big stationary bar, and the bartender, you'd have a different bartender every time you come around. You buy a drink, you bought a drink on that side, the stage would go around, and it was a novel idea. And those girls ordered a drink, and I said, I'll have what they're drinking. I didn't know what the hell it was. So I took that drink, and I drank that drink with impunity, and nothing happened. Would you believe it? I did not become an instant alcoholic. And there is no such a thing as an instant alcoholic. Read the doctor's opinion. I may be somewhat controversial, but if it's not in the book, it's not AA. That's the way I heard it. And you know, we have to practice, we have to cross over that invisible line. We don't hear about that no more. But you got to drink enough until your liver stops working, the enzymes stop purifying that alcohol going through, and it starts to become acetone. And when it becomes acetone, it starts to destroy the body. And that's when the compulsion starts to set in. I never drank anymore after that much. I just drank a little bit. Finally, I got a job out there. They were going to organize the studios. And these same guys that were going to organize the studios, their names ended in a vowel, A-E-I-O-U. They came from Buffalo, Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland. And my cousin Bad Eye was one. So he said, go over there and sign up. You're going to be make sure no one gets in there. We're going to put a union in the studios. So we went there and we signed up and we had a baseball bat, and they said, if you come through your gate, you just beat them over there with the bat. Well, I was not adverse to that. It was okay with me if they want to try their nuts. So I stayed there about 19, 20 days after the strike. They kidnapped Cecil B. DeMille and the strike was over. Then they all took us into the Ambassador Hotel, and the Ahuja was working there for them, and they asked you, what kind of a job would you like? Now, I was adverse to work. I didn't like work. I thought labor was a Mexican guy, you know. And I didn't want to do that. So I just went up there and I was brazen. And the guy said, I remember he looked like a guy in The Godfather, white hat, banana yellow AAA shoes and black white pinstripe suit, you know. And he said, what kind of the job do you want, the boy? And I looked at him and I looked at my cousin Bad Eye and I said, I want to be a hairdresser. This guy said, what are you, crazy? Them people are kind of funny. I said, hey, don't worry about it, I know. And I said, Bad Eye, tell him. So my cousin Bad Eye said, leave him go, he's nuts. But I got to tell you so you don't get to think any funny ideas now. I went to school in 1940, beauty school, because I was at a dance one night. And I said, hey, Mike, where you been? I haven't seen you. Oh, he says, I'm going to dress designing school. He said, man, there's about 80 girls to 3 or 4 guys. I said, Mike, I think I'd like to be a dress designer. He said, oh, he said, don't worry about that. He said, you go to beauty school because there's 102 girls to 3 guys. Now, you know, quick math, I was never good in school, but I know that's a great odds, you know. So even a blind chicken gets a kernel of corn once in a while. I went there for 30 days. I didn't learn nothing, got a lot of corn. Then I went back again. I'm not dirty. And no swearing in my program. But anyhow, I went back another 30 days in 1941, and I went back for 30 more days in 42, just before I went to the Army. Didn't learn nothing. But I went to work for 20th Century Fox for Helen Hunt. And, you know, those people there have seen only the good side of life. They've never seen a seedy guy like me, a guy from off the street corners with hoodlums and that. And she took a liking to me. And she started showing me what to do. And I'll tell you one thing. AA is like anything else you do. If you want a job and you want to perfect your job, it's constant repetition. You do the same thing over and over again, and I've been doing it for 40-some years almost. It doesn't change. And constant repetition, somebody says, well, I don't like repetition. Put your hand on your heart, and what do you feel? It's beating. That's repetition. Thank God. Thank God. My father said, if you want anything in life, you work for it. You work for it. You don't demand it. My father came from the old country. I just found his paper thing when he landed at Ellis Island. Couldn't speak a word of English. Joined the United States Army to be clear to become an American citizen. Okay? Learned how to dig ditches, and through the big depression of 29, we never went without food. Maybe we didn't have a lot of food, but we had something. And he earned his way into this country to be a good American citizen. He earned his way. He just didn't ask and fight his way through and just, I got this coming. You earned your way, whether it be the Italians, the Irish, the immigrants that came over at that time. They earned their way in America to be something. And when you come to Alcoholics Anonymous, you have to earn your way here, too, because there are rules here, just like there are rules in anything else you do in the world. Anyhow, I got in trouble there with a sting operation. It was like if you saw the movie Sting with Paul Newman, these guys got me involved in that. I had to get the movie stars to be stung, and I had to leave town in the middle of the night. Because if they had got me, I'd have went to jail for 10 years. And they made a big hit with these guys, and they were greedy too, because they won the first couple of weeks in a row, a lot of money, and then they wanted to make a big killing. So greed takes a perk. Anyhow, I came back to Cleveland. I got on the Union Pacific train in Los Angeles and rode the train all the way back to Cleveland. And when I got here, I didn't like what I saw. It was cold, it was November, and it was snowy, and I didn't have a coat. I just had a Palm Beach suit. And I decided I'd stay 8 days and go back to California, because now my thinking is changing. I'm drinking a little more. I just was, and you know, when I first got my name on the screen, you know, this Dago had an ego. Now, ego is something it says in the book, you got to smash it. You got to smash that ego. And I had an ego. And when I became a hairdresser, my name was on the screen. There was no stopping me, man. I went out and I did everything first class, because at that time I was making more a week than my father made in a month. And you know, I bought myself a car befitting to a young Italian boy. I bought myself a black 1939 Buick Roadmaster with the fender wells on the side. And I cruised down Sunset Boulevard, you know. And I'd have the windows up. If a girl got in, I'd say, God damn, that fan just broke on that air conditioner. There's no air conditioner. But you know, that was the ego. Anyhow, when I got back to Cleveland, didn't like it. So I went on to New York City, and my uncle was a guy that we were talking about at this dinner time. He owned the Tavern on the Green. He owned the Piccadilly Circus Bar on Times Square and the Theater Bar and Grill on Times Square. And he spoke broken English, you know. He must have had some connections. But anyhow... I know one thing. He invested $1,000 in Oklahoma when everybody thought it would be a failure. And today every one of his kids are living off the royalties, you know. But he was a millionaire from what he had them bars and that. Anyhow, he told me one day, he said, we're going to call your father because you're starting to drink like a crumb bum. Now, this is 1947. He didn't know what a crumb bum, he didn't know what an alcoholic was. And he said, you just go, because I don't want you drinking in my bar. And I said, give me a job. I want to work. I did want to work. But I couldn't get in a union because my card from California was not transferable. So he gave me a name of a woman named Helena Rubenstein, may mean something to you. And she said, do you like to travel? I said, sure, but off of California. Oh, she said, why? I said, because I got pollen. I get the dust out there. I get choked up. Oh, she said, don't worry about it. Go get a passport. Well, when I got back with the passport about 30 days later, I was sent on ocean-going liners as a hairdresser. Now, I thought I had it good before. When I got on those ocean-going lines, if you watch Love Boat, magnify that by 100 times. This is the world to live in. And I tell you today, if you're having a problem with your marriage and you want to send your wife on a cruise to be alone, don't do it. You go with her. Because there's bound to be some little sneaky little digger like me behind that chair. And you know, and I'll tell you, that's when my drinking got bad. See, I would drink every 2.5 hours, 4 to 6 ounces of vodka, and worked every single day. And you know, I started developing conscience. Now, we don't hear about conscience in Alcoholics Anonymous anymore today. I did when we come from Sister Ignatia in Cleveland. Conscience is the thing that drives you mad. Conscience is the thing when you tell you're doing something wrong. And in order to get rid of the conscience, if you come home at night and your wife finds lipstick on you, you lie to her. But you know your conscience bothers. So the next morning, you got to drink to get over that guilt. You drink some more, see? And starts that progression of drinking. And now I'm over there drinking every day. And I'm getting involved with all... I found out one thing, that thou shalt not commit adultery don't count because I'm single. So what the hell do I care? Right? I could rationalize, you know, and I could rationalize, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods. I didn't have anybody from Cleveland on board that ship. But, you know, I started having trouble, and I was crisscrossing that Atlantic, and you know, it was just going up and down, crisscrossing that Atlantic. And every time I would land in a town, a city, I would drink. I would drink. And then somebody would say, why don't you go see the Big Ben? Who the hell wants to see a big clock bonging, you know? not my fun. I still travel 25 weeks a year. I don't see nothing but the inside of hotels where the conventions are. And who wants to go see the Eiffel Tower? That piece of iron to stick it in the air. Who cares? You know. And it's just goofy things. I never had a camera. Who needs a camera? I remember. Photographic mind. 5'2", eyes are blue. That was okay. But, you know, it got to the point where every time I'd like be in England, I could start trouble with my mouth. I'd say, you know, I just happen to think of it. You Englishmen never paid us back from World War I, the war debt. You owe us the money. Everybody's starting to shut up. You guys don't know nothing. Bang. I'm going out the door. And I just be thrown out the door. I say, you don't know who I am. They say, yes, we do. Get out. And don't come back. So they take me back to the ship. The cops would take me to Jardine, whatever they call those guys there. And then I'd get in trouble in France because I didn't like some of the girls. Well, who cares? You know. And then I got in trouble in Italy. When you get in trouble in Italy and you're an Italian, you got a problem. And, you know, it was just because I was getting in trouble doing things I shouldn't be doing. You know, I knew I was guilty. I knew that I was drinking too much. And in 1949, I decided right before Christmas, I'm coming back to Cleveland and my mother can help me get sober. So I take that trip back to Cleveland and my mother's. And when I got back here, I knew I made a mistake. See, I knew I made a mistake. I couldn't go back to California no more. So I'm sitting home and now it starts. My mother tells me, what time are you coming home at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning? What are you doing? Ma, you were married and you had 3 children. Don't you know what's going on? My father goes, shut your mouth. I'll break your face. I never swore in front of my father or mother. Would you believe that? And I did a lot of drinking. Anyhow, it got to the point where I didn't know what to do. So then I got a job with a guy in Cleveland who was starting his own business. He was going to build a couple of shops. And we were tied in with a big shopping center builder. And he hired me because I knew how to cut hair from New York. Hair was long at that time, sausage curls. We cut it short and made it like it is today. And we just had a wonderful time. And I was with him for 2 years. And pretty soon we did TV shows. I was getting my name on TV. And the show was Make Up and Live. And then I opened my own beauty salon. But in the meantime, my mother's taking me to Catherine Coleman, the healers in Pittsburgh. And I was getting bopped and dipped, you know. And shit, it wasn't helping. And if you're here under duress, you're in the wrong room. Because it isn't going to work. It doesn't rub off. The only thing it might rub off is the dust on that chair. If someone left some dust there. You can't get AA by osmosis. And you can't get educated into sobriety either. You have to suffer enough to get here. That's what the book tells me. Well, these are perception. When you don't want to live and you don't want to die. But you see, I wanted to live, but I didn't want to buy these holy roller stuff. And then they took me to another guy. Billy Graham had a big revival down at Cleveland Stadium. There was about 60,000 people, and I made that altar call. And my mother was so proud of me, I marched up there. Shit, man, I got out of there, I had a drink. And then I went to another guy, Rex Humbard in Akron, if you ever get to Akron. And Rex didn't help me, dipped and bopped again, doesn't help. I was getting dipped and bopped and people in the ring fighting. And, you know, then I tried another guy, and his name is Ernest Angley. Maybe you get him out here. And I told my mother, Ma, this guy got a wig. It's so bad he can't even grow hair on his head. And I got bopped and dipped again, and nothing happened. You know, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going through a crisis now, midlife crisis, I think it is. I'm sponsoring more people that get 5 or 10 years sober, and suddenly they're going to become spiritual giants in a church, and they forget where they got sober. I just went through with somebody in Augusta. They're going to go to church, and they go to Baptist church, I guess. I don't know. And I said, you go to church 12 hours a day. Where did you get sober? She said, in AA. I said, what did the church do for you? Nothing. Did he come to your house when you were sick? No, he said, my flock comes to me. Oh, and then he tells her that alcoholism is a disease. Well, we didn't know that. And I just don't, because sooner or later they all come back drunk. Alcoholics Anonymous must be number one in your life. And you better shine this thing like a jewel, or else you're going to lose it. The recovery rate is bad now. When I came here, we had 75% recovery. And I can prove that in books, it shows that. And I got documented proof at Dr. Bob's house, who people the recovery rate from Akron St. Thomas Hospital in Cleveland, where I came through, Rosary Hall. And that was because we had sponsors who told the truth. Sponsors that told the truth. Anyhow, I just kept on drinking. And one day my uncle came over, he said, hey, Doc, you're drinking too much. I said, hey, Uncle Tommy, just don't bother me. I haven't bopped, dipped. I know what a drunk looks like. I see him at the place. I work a suit, wear a suit, the tie to work every day. I drive a new Cadillac. What are you bothering me for? He said, well, if you want any help, call me. Now, I didn't know my uncle, nothing about AA. He never heard that word, Alcoholics Anonymous. My uncle came in Alcoholics Anonymous in 1941 and never told me that he had a way that could make me work. If I don't want this program, it will never work. And I don't care, you can go to 35 detoxes. I got one guy that had been in 35 detoxes now, and he ain't any better than the day he walked in the first time. Now he knows more than the counselors. He can write his own test papers out. So anyhow, I'm just going along. Then all of a sudden I got married, and that marriage didn't do too well. I opened my first beauty salon. She didn't like me staying out late at night. I thought she didn't understand I was an Italian husband. I'm supposed to be out at night. She thought it was kind of funny. So one night I come home and she said this, and it's all done. I want a divorce. I said, why? She said, I married you because you were exciting, and now I'm going to leave you because the excitement is killing me. So I said, go ahead. I said, you know, now I can drink the way I want to drink. You've been bothering me. She said, well, I want to tell you something. I never poured a drink down your throat, and you're a junk. So that was that one. That ended that marriage. That's two. And then we go down the road a piece, and I look at another. I find an Irish girl. Now I think I'm going to get better. Because, you know, Irish know how to drink. And I have three big beauty salons now. This time I'm employing maybe 60, 70 people in three salons, working every single day, every 2.5 hours, drinking. I wore more Bianca, if you remember Bianca, and we had Sensen, and I had spray, I sprayed a lacquer on me, you know, get anything to get that alcohol out. And, you know, it was just bad. And, you know, no one knew, even when I come to AA, that I was drinking that much. But I was a sneak drinker. I just stayed level. And what happened, I married that girl, and we ran away and got married. Went to meet her father. And he was probably like me now. He was tall and thin, bent over a little bit, and he had gray hair. And he said, kid, I'm watching you drink vodka out of that water glass. You're going to lose your wife. You lose those three beauty salons. And you're going to lose everything you got. And I said, hey, let me tell you something. Pop, I want to tell you one thing. Go see my Uncle Tommy down in Collinwood. You can start your own Holy Roller Church. He said, if you ever want help, call me. My father-in-law came into Alcoholics Anonymous in 1939 in New York City, right after the book was written, published. Never told me about Alcoholics Anonymous. Never told me. Alcoholics Anonymous was not told on television, these treatment centers, whatever you call them out here, where the care unit says, we'll get you sober even if you don't want to be sober. You know, if recovery was dependent upon treatment centers, they would have 100% recovery because everybody walks out, they did at my time, was sober. Now they don't come out sober, they come out goofed up on pills. They're wobbling all fast. Ooh. I tell you, I'm a fundamentalist and I get blamed a lot for that. But I don't care. I believe in Alcoholics Anonymous the way it was and the way it shall be forever. Amen. That's the end of that sermon, baby. Anyhow, I married that girl and it didn't bother me. But the next end of that year, I went to mental hospital because I'd rather have a nervous breakdown, I thought, than tell them I was a drunk. When I got there, they fed me pyraldide for 8 days in straps. Now, if you ever had nothing to drink, try pyraldide. It's a thrill a minute. You sleep for about 10, 12 hours, and they stink like hell. No one wants to come near your room. And that went on. Finally, they said, go to therapy. You know, and I went up, and an old lady was singing, and the guy said, there'll be more songs you sing, the quicker you get out. Request, the quicker you get out. So I requested all those songs. World War I, Annie, get your gun over there. I requested them all, and I got out in 8 days, and they gave me a bottle of Milton, the wonder drug. And I said, oh, thank you. And I thought he said you take four every 1 hour. And I did that for 2 days. And I'm sitting at a railroad crossing, got the Cadillac and drive. We don't have no guardrails at that time in that neighborhood I was living in. And the car's right up in the front and the train's going back, zoom, zoom, zoom. All of a sudden the whole car starts to shake. I see them wheels and I threw that car in reverse. No, I haven't got no one behind me. I got out and went home and called that psychiatrist. And I said, let me tell you, it's almost 16 days I haven't had a drink now. Do you think I can have a glass of wine with my spaghetti? Oh, he said, sure you can, just one glass. I took that one glass of wine and I drank it with impunity. Nothing happened. See, I wasn't a drunk. It just took one glass. And 3 weeks, I'm back to a fifth and a half to vodka a day or better, see? Now I really got a problem. And during that time, until 1961, my wife gave birth to 3 children. Don't ever remember them being born. Never was at the hospital to see him, never took him home, never changed the diaper, never fed him, never did nothing. And I'm ashamed of that. I made money, though. I made money. I wound up with a total of 8 beauty salons and a school downtown Cleveland. And worked every single day, did 176 weeks of television show called Makeup and Live with Cassini. And I went to that TV show, and at that time they came out live. And I could tell you, I embarrassed my mother many times. I used to carry a flask in here if I needed a drink, and we'd wait for the red light to come on, and then you knew you couldn't drink. And if I caught that, I thought I'd take the drink and start sucking out of the flask, and a light would come on. Makeup and the Fascination would be playing. And there's the man of distinction there. But you know, there was many things I did that was shameful. And shame is another thing we don't talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous. Shame is what you do to yourself. Guilt is what you do to someone else. You know, I kept on drinking. In 1958, I got in some trouble in Las Vegas, and that so happens that week, there was a lot of people worked in Vegas that time, and I knew them all. But that day, I couldn't find anybody to give me some money to get out. So I had to stay there, and I finally wrote a check. I had federal withholding checks. Now, that's a felony. That was my employee's taxes. And I wrote that check out, and when the check cleared, I left. The guy who left me there was an Italian kid too. He was a road builder. He paid Interstate 90 into New York. He made all the major highways in the northern part of Ohio. A very wealthy young boy. And I hated him. See, Italians don't know what resentment was. I never heard about that word till I got here. We just went straight to hate. And if hate didn't work, we went to vendettas, you know. Just get it out of the way. And so anyhow, in 1961, I'm drinking bad. My wife is not happy with me. I'm doing the TV shows, and I got to drink when I'm going downtown. And how do you get downtown with an open bottle in a convertible? You can't drink out of the bottle. The cops will catch you. You're going to get fined. So I figured it out. I had a glass bottle in that 59 caddy with a big glass windshield washer bottle. And I cleaned that out real good, and I filled it up with vodka. And my wife had a bag, and I don't know what it was for, with a long hose that hung in the bathroom. And I cut the hose off of that thing. and I ran it through the firewall, hooked it up underneath the dash, and when the compulsion set in, you get the clammy sweats and your stomach starts drawing, your legs get cramped, you know you need a drink. So you stick the hose in your mouth, you're going past the cop, you hit the windshield washer buttons, the top is down, you wave at the cop, and you're getting two hot shots of vodka. If you see a guy going down here tonight with a hose in his mouth and he's laughing, get him, he's going to come. He belongs here. He's heard my story. Anyhow, I'm going to just tell you, it was hell. I went to the hospital on August 31st, 1961. My sponsor, I called the doctor, and I told the doctor I blew up. I totally blew up, turned yellow overnight, couldn't put my shoes on, nothing fit. Pants wouldn't fit. And I called the doctor I played golf with the day before, and his girl said, he'd be in at 1:30, come on in. I told her how bad I was. She said, I'll get you right in. 1:30, I got there. He took one look at me. He says, you got to go to the hospital. You got liver trouble very bad. I said, I can't go because it's Labor Day weekend. I got payroll to meet. We didn't have computers then. It was all done by hand. I had to do over 100 payrolls. He said, you'll never make next week. Now, nobody believes the doctor, you know. He ain't going to tell you the truth. And not when you're drinking, you know. Anyhow, I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll think about it. He said, I'm going to fill a prescription. And when I come back, I want an answer. So when he to come back, he filled a prescription. He said, when he come back, he said, what are you going to do? And I went to three meetings with him. And the first one, I heard about Sister Ignatius gives you all you want to drink. The second one, I heard that they couldn't touch you if you wanted for a felony. IRS was now after me. And then I heard that they get liver trouble. So what happened was I said to him, I got a sponsor. Now, I heard that when I was counting ceiling tiles and floor tiles. And that's all I remember. I didn't know where I got that word from. He says, call your sponsor and have him take you to a meeting. Now, if I ever think I'm doing too much for Alcoholics Anonymous, I better remember. My sponsor drove in. When I got his wife on the phone, she called him. He was in Dunkirk, New York, which is now 2.5 hours by interstate to my house. He drove in at that time. It took him almost 6.5 hours to come in on over Route 20. And we were told, I told you, I'm just not preceding me going to AA. Sister Ignatia would say, when you are sponsoring somebody, you're charged with their life. It may sound ridiculous to you, but you are charged with their life. Because you're supposed to give them what you were taught. And if you're carrying a mess rather than the message, you got a problem. So anyhow, he drove in, took me to Rosary Hall, 11:15 at night. Sister Ignatia was waiting for me. She looked at me and she said, I'm calling the priest in, we're giving you last rites. And that we got last rites and I went into a coma. I stayed in a coma for 8 days. I was taken out of the hospital immediately, put in intensive care, tapped 5 times, took out 7 liters of water, and it was the most painful thing ever done to me. And I kept going out, and though they were praying day in and day out. And the only people, we had no counselors at that time in St. Vincent's. We had just the people who got sober preceding us. And some of the men, the first maybe 100 men, were still around AA when I got there. They were still alive. And these were the teachers we had. And I just stayed there, and I was dying. And pretty soon one day they stopped feeding me intravenously and they take me down. We say the rosary in the chair every day at 3 o'clock. I didn't even know how to say the Our Father and the Hail Mary. I had to learn it all over again. And that's a hell of a crime for an Italian boy. It was an altar boy. Didn't know how to say the Our Father. And I went down there and they'd wheel me down and the giants would talk to me. One guy would say, kid, once an alcoholic. I was a kid then when I come there. I want you to know that. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. You'll never go back to social drinking. How many of you people went back to drinking? Don't put your hands up. Just think. Was it better the second time? Was it easier to walk in that door the second time like a little cat got your tail or some damn thing? Sneak in. And somebody says, hey, what step were you working on when you got drunk? You know. Anyhow, it never got better. And then one day, guys leading me down the road. And he said to me, kid, he said, this thing is like a celebration. And I've made it a celebration from then on. He said, you want the cake? You want the frosting on top? You want the whipped cream and the cherry on top of that? And that man was Clarence Snyder, who was the brewmeister in the big book. He's the man that took AA from Oxford Group to Alcoholics Anonymous in Cleveland, Ohio. And I didn't know what he was talking about. It was just Greek to me. And then one day I'm going to go down to Rosary Hall because Sister Ignatia walked into my room and she said, Don, she says, you can go home now. And go out and finish off your drunk because your attitude stinks. And it did stink. Because during that course of the time, my wife had me sign a power of attorney. And in less than, it was almost 2 months I was in the hospital. And with that time, she sold everything, so took the kids, moved to another state, didn't know where the hell she was at, sold everything to a couple guys who bought three shops, who bought two shops, who bought a school, and sold the house. And I could stay there till January 1st. But she was gone. So now I hate everybody, see? And I'm going down there, and I hate God. I really hate him. And I tell you, we don't just resent, we hate. And he just did everything wrong for me. Not that I ever did anything right, you know. But, you know, it was that night. And she said, you go out of here, finish off your drunk. And I tell you, today we'd have better results, and this is my opinion, if you could not come back to this treatment center for the second time. We were only allowed one time into a treatment center, and we didn't get paid by Blue Cross. We paid $250 at that time, and the doctor bill was $15. You know, I was a different case, but that's what the price was to go to Rosary Hall. 6 days and five nights. And she said, you can go down, and she said, tell me in the morning. And she turned to walk away. I'll show you, little penguin. She said, what'd you say? I said, I'll talk to you in the morning, sister. I went to Rosary Hall and never took a drink ever since the day I got to the hospital. And during the course of that time, I was talking to Clarence Snyder. He was here to speak at an anniversary. And he said to me, kid, he said, I'm going to tell you something. When you leave here, you're a sick cookie. And when you leave here, the doctor's going to give you a prescription. And when you get that prescription, you fill it out now. Don't walk past Standard Drug or Walgreens Drug and wait till you feel better to fill it out. Fill it out now so you'll get better. And you know something? I travel this country, and I'm going to Mexico again. I'm going up to Iceland in a couple of months. And you know something? I've yet to hear somebody say, my sponsor said, and I've heard it 100 times. I'm sober only 2 years. I'm not allowed to take a fourth step. Some page, it's in the book, I'm going to tell you that so you look for it, but it says, being convinced after A, B, and C, at once we proceed into a four-step inventory. At once means now. Doesn't mean 10 months from now. Doesn't mean 2 years from now. When you feel better, you're going to do it. It's a cleansing step to keep you sober. Anyhow, I come out of that hospital and things were bad. My co-sponsor committed suicide. Spirits of sobriety were shorter than the spirits of drinking, and my sponsor went back to drinking. I got another sponsor at that time. He weighed 347 pounds, and he was big. And I was a toy. He could throw me. And he took me to Gethsemane, a Trappist monastery, and I'm not going to tell you the monastery had anything to do with my sobriety. I hated the monastery. I hated being there. I hated everything about it. I hated the ride there. I hated all those dagos that took me there. You know. And, you know, they were just having a good time, lollygagging, smoking cigars. I smoked cigars, too, at the time. And, you know, just having a good time. I'm there cringing. So when I got there, we drove all night to get there. It's 9 o'clock in the morning. This little priest comes over by me. He says, kid, I understand you're not happy. I say, you wouldn't be happy either if God took everything away from you. Well, he looked down at me with a glass. He said, kid, I'm going to tell you something. God never took nothing away from you. He gave it away. If you don't have your wife today, you don't have a job, you don't have a home, they kicked you out and you got everything gone, you know who took it away from you? You did. I gave everything away. And he said that you sacrificed everything on the altar of alcohol. And I didn't take any of those other mood altering drugs, you know, like they talk about. Who? Doodies, you know. Or I'm an addict. I slept in an attic when I got sober, so I know what that is. You know, and this priest, his name was Father Fall, who wrote the Golden Books, and Sobriety Without End and Sobriety and Beyond. He was the first priest in AA, and he was given permission to give retreats to help alcoholics. And I didn't know who he was at the time. And then he said, the second step, kid, he says, you know, I'm going to tell you something. You've been here a year and a little over a year and 6 months or 4 months. He said, if you go back to drinking again, he said, that means you're nuts. He says, number one, you got no power. Number two, you're nuts a little bit. Because you think it's going to be any different, you're really nuts. He says, and three, you turn the will in your life over to the care of God as you understood him. Understood with the faith of a child. Not understand, it's understood. And it's in italics on the walls in the clubhouses. That's with the faith of a child. Have you ever had a child come up to you and they're standing at the table with your baby and they jump into your arms? You're not expecting them, but they expect you to catch them. And you catch them, see. And then he said, that's the third step. As of this time, no action has been taken. You came here, you had a desire to quit. He turned, God, you found that, asking the power to give you to do something. He turned over to the power. The power was in AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. And now, number three, we're going to give, find this power who's more powerful than all three, him, you, and God. And that's the triangle there. And that's the third step. We take that third step and we give it to God. And we give it to him and we told, we do the fourth, he made me do the fourth step exactly as in the book. And I did it that night. And I lost that ring the night that my sponsor says, we're going to hear him sing the Gregorian chant. I said, you're going. He picked me up and threw me down the hallway. He said, let's go. And we walked down that long hallway and I said, Tony, I lost the ring. He said, you'll find it in the morning. As I'm going down that long hallway, there was 140 monks singing. And I see that white candle flickering there, and we're headed towards that candle, and I remember something my mother told me. Everything starts with a belief. And she said, Saint Anthony, please come around. There's a ring lost. It's got to be found. And the next morning, I found that ring, and it started a little bit of faith. We don't get faith by leaps and bounds. We don't find God overnight because he's never been lost. God is in this room right tonight. He's in our presence. People come here, they're 3 months, they found God. Where the hell was he? In a dumpster? Who the hell do you think carried you through all those scrapes when you were drinking, huh? Anyhow, he started me, he said, "That's do that fourth step." I did the fourth step, and I did a pretty nice job, I thought. And you don't have to be perfect, for you people are waiting 2 years to do it. Just get rid of the worst garbage out. I'll give you a scenario, and you girls can understand this. If you come home from a camping trip and your refrigerator, you had power went off, your food in the refrigerator was all rotten and spoiled, you walk by that refrigerator and say, well, let me think. I'll come back in 6 weeks. That's what you're doing with the garbage in your system. Alcoholics Anonymous is gangrene to the soul. It's gangrene to the soul. That's what we got. And that's the things we inventory. I'm going to be in that sex and relation class at midnight tonight, see what I can learn. But you know, and then he said, you got that written down, and I wrote it down the best thing. I didn't take everything out. People in this room tonight are holding something that should have been their fourth step, and they don't want to give it up. They're guilty, and they don't want to give up the guilt and the leech. It's a two-sided sword, and you'll drink again. Tells you that in the book. My book does. I read the black lines, not the white lines. They work better. Anyhow, I kept on going, see? And he said, you take that fifth step and you give it to God for forgiveness. You give it to yourself for understanding. And you give it to a human being, another human being, for humility. No one likes to look eyeball to eyeball in another person's eyes and tell them the exact nature of their wrongs. And I tell the people I sponsor, I send them to a priest or somebody at the cross. I don't want to hear what they got to say. I might not like them after they tell me that. Some people I don't have to like, you know. If you like everybody in AA, you're really not going to enough meetings. You better know that. Well, anyhow, I got sober. And I'll quickly tell you this. Step 6 and 7 are the easiest steps in the book. They're the shortest and easiest. Step 6, very simple for you young people. I had black hair when I got here. I knew what the world was about. Stop doing the things you like to do. Don't do that all week long and pray for crop failure on Sunday. And number 7, you start doing the things you don't want to do. Get a big book, get a home group, get a sponsor, and make a commitment. Alcoholics Anonymous is a commitment. And I've been committed to this thing for almost 40 years. I don't need to go to 7 meetings a week or 8. I still do it. I'm still learning. I still pick up that book and read something that wasn't in there a year ago. And they haven't changed it. They haven't changed it. My kids grew up and I never saw them again. I married a girl later on in 1971 and she was sober and was 9 years and she went back to drinking and she died. I know both sides of the coin now, you see. She had 2 children. I had 3. I got my kids back in 1973. One boy was paranoid schizophrenic. And he lived every year until 1988, spent 6-7 months in the mental hospital. He would change places with anybody in this room today because he can't cure his own disease. Look at yourself in the mirror when you go home tonight. You're the only one that can cure your disease. You're the only one who can do anything about your alcoholism. Not me as a sponsor, not and God is not going to get you sober either unless you take an action. You got to take an action. And you know, I had my boy that was sick, and I didn't want to give him some medicine unknown, and I didn't trust God. Everybody in this room here believes in God right now, and I used to talk about trusting him. It was over 20-some years. And I just went to see a priest. I says, Father Atkins, he was Father Paul's buddy. I said, I don't know what to do with this medicine. He says, sign it. You've been talking about trusting God. Trust him. I want to tell you, it's very difficult to trust unless you've been in the crisis. Unless you've been in the crisis. I can tell you this. For those who know me, for as many years I've been coming here, my son lived in Atlanta. And for the last 2 years I've been coming here, my boy was sick. Well, last 2 years ago in this... Last year, I called him in February. We were going to go to Italy for a tour, 3 weeks. And he called me back in a couple weeks later, and he said, Dad, the tour is off. Get your money back. He said, because I've got 90 days to live or 3 months to live. And I said, no, Donald. He said, and he started crying. And he cursing God. And I came out here and... he was just crying. He's sobbing. Hated God for what it did to him. 39 years old boy, young, good-looking boy. Some of you may have seen him. He's come to meet me at the conference here. And some of you knew him. And you know, he brought him back to Cleveland, and it was terrible, terrible. And you know, all I can do is turn him over. Because God brought him into this earth, and somebody says, how did you do what you did? I have no alternative but let him have him to God. I don't want him to live in suffering. And November 21st, my son passed away. And he died in the hospice in Naples, Florida, where I had to take him down by his mother. So I've had troubles in life. I had open heart surgery. My boy got the medicine that I didn't want him to sign for, and he signed it, and he's doing well now. But you know, we taught these steps are a part of our life. And if they're not a part of your life, you're not going to stay here. You know, if you get a sobriety countdown, I venture to tell you that 50, 90, 70% of the people are sober under 5 years. And the people of 20 years and 30 years and above are maybe 3 or 4 in the crowd. There's something wrong. There's something wrong. And what's wrong is we're not using that book. And I'm going to go to preaching for a few minutes, and then I'm going to say goodbye. Because I want to get in that sex class. You know, I want to just say one thing. I'm glad you're laughing, because laughter is the language of the heart. When we can laugh at our mistakes and the things we did, there was to be a card that said, Lord, teach me to laugh, but don't ever let me forget I cried. That was an old card we had years ago. Anyhow, just let me say this. One day I was going to trial, and I said to Sister Ignatia, Sister Ignatia, why don't you go talk to somebody in the Federal Bureau there so you could get a lot of pull. She had a lot of pull. And I said, you know, because I don't want to, I said, come with me in the chapel and pray. She said, you go to pray for yourself. God likes to hear strange voices. And then I got mad, and I'm getting mad. She heard me mumbling to myself, and she said, Don, let me tell you something. Just take this to the bank with you. Pray to God daily, because he's easier to talk to most people. And where you're going, you better start talking to him, because I was going to prison. And I hated her. I got those cards in my pocket. I had them made up, so I'll never forget. If you want one, I've got one in the other room. I'll give you one. But you see, it has not always been easy. I don't have a canned speech. If you'd buy a couple of my tapes, which they might have on here, but it's different. I talk the way I feel tonight. I've heard guys, and I'm not criticizing them, they come here and they got 1941, I took that drink, comma. They go down the road that hasn't... What the hell have you done since you got sober in 30 years? Tell me what you've done. I'm very serious about this thing. If you give nothing back to Alcoholics Anonymous, you get nothing in return. If you don't go put any money in the bank when you go to draw it out, there's nothing there. They used to say, go to do things for AIDS insurance. You buy insurance. If you don't pay for your premiums, you don't get insurance. I have not had an easy life. I had a very difficult life. But you know something? I've stayed sober in spite of it all. And I've enjoyed my sobriety, because I think a sobriety is a gift from God. It's a gift from God. And if we don't want to take this sobriety and want to kick God in the teeth, then just kick him in the teeth. I got a girl right now in Georgia. She served 13 years in the penitentiary on prescription felony charges and all that stuff, and holdups. And just the other day, she wanted me to write her a letter to tell the judge she was doing good. And I said, when I was at the Hilton Head, you were drunk. I said, I expected to tell you that. Then I find out the judge sentenced her to 1 year to life. A minimum of 1 year and the maximum life. And now she's in the penitentiary because she went back on crack. Stole our mother's money, stole everything from her friends. Everything was gone. And there's something that has to happen so people will wake up. I don't believe anybody dies in vain. And I don't tell anybody they commit suicide when they're drunk. They do it when they're sober because they can't face the real world. You know, I'm going to just close with something that I heard years back. It's in a pamphlet called The Member's Eye View. And it's talking about John the Baptist at Rangwishan in Herod's prison. And he said, go out and find my cousin Jesus and see if he's the Messiah. And he said, when you find out, just ask him if he can come out of prison. So they're walking along the river in Israel. And he's come across Jesus and he's talking in parables. People there. And the guy said, Jesus, he wants to know if he can get him out of prison. He said, you tell him that if he wants to know if I'm the Messiah, you just tell him that follow me and we'll tell him what's going on. So they followed and there comes a man laying on a cot and he said, drag your cot into the river and when you walk out, leave your cot there and you won't be lame. So the man dragged his cot to the river and he walked out and he wasn't lame. And you know why he wasn't lame? Because he took an action. Action is the magic word in Alcoholics Anonymous. The only word that precedes action is honesty. If we're not honest with ourselves, we'll never be honest with our maker, and we'll never be honest with anyone else. And then he came across the blind man. He told the blind man, have your buddy go take you into the river, put mud on your eyes, and when you wash the mud off, you'll see. And he took the mud on, went to the river, put the mud on his eyes, and when he washed it out, he saw. And you know why he saw? Because he took the action. He came to the lepers, and the lepers didn't want to go into the water. Because if you've ever seen lepers, the skin is falling off, and it cuts cold water, brutal. So they finally convinced they all went in. And when they all came out, they were all grateful they were cleansed. And there's a direct correlation between that part of the Bible and what we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. Every month they're spitting out 1,000 new people or 2,000 people are all grateful they got sober for that month. How many have gratitude and come back to help with Alcoholics Anonymous? And if you were to ask me what I've seen in almost 40 years, through the longest day and the darkest night, I've seen the good news of Alcoholics Anonymous still being carried. The only way it'll ever be carried, one drunk to another. Thank you for having me.